Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take the gloves off. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4. It's time to get out of your seat and make a little noise. Now get ready for the truth. The Politics Cafe. Frontline with Kit Lane. The Extreme Court. And America Today Live. Please try to remain calm. This will be your last warning. Welcome to Politics Lobby 4.
Ladies and gentlemen and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com and the ASI Radio Network. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. The Politics Cafe is brought to you by Pal Talk. We are broadcasting from Pal Talk, Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room. Hello, my name is Mark Belcher. I'm your host, and we got a show for you tonight, folks. Once again, we are on the campaign trail for Mr. Duncan Hunter, and things appear to be looking up from what I understand out there. You folks have been sending the letters off. God bless you. Let's hope they reach some intelligent ears, somebody willing to look at his website, somebody willing to send a couple of bucks down along him, get the message along. We are looking for a conservative candidate for president. Through my search through all the candidates that are out there, Duncan Hunter has risen to the top. The cream always does rise to the top, folks, and he's the man. And we're hoping, and I'm going to run a little more on it tonight. One of the things that I wanted to get started on, and actually later on I'm going to actually get into a little news. There's a few things in the news that I could definitely bear talking about. But one of the things that Duncan has been pushing is something I had to do a little bit of research on today, and found it rather interesting. And that is the fair tax. Now, Duncan Hunter has stated quite clearly that he supports the fair tax. Now, not don't get this too wrong here. Some of the other candidates are also. I have heard Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney both say that they support the idea. But they've dropped it at that point, and you don't hear too much more about it. And I think, folks, that this is something that totally bears looking at. It's something that I didn't totally understand up to a point. But I got to admit that it's amazing. It really, really, really is if you sit and look at it. You know, anything at this point in time, I think, that would remove us from the clutches of the IRS has got to be worthwhile looking at. The IRS is just, well, let's face it, these people are worse than vultures. I'm surprised that a lot of these people haven't really been recruited right from communist countries, ex-Nazis, what have you. They realize that they have the power to do whatever they want to do, and they basically use that power. And unless you've got an army of lawyers, and some of those lawyers had best used to work for the IRS, or else they won't be able to find their way around them. You know, they've got you. They can take anything from you. You know, they can go into your bank account and just wipe it out whenever they please. Come in, slap liens on your home, do all sorts of nasty things to you. Should you fail to comply with everything that they have there, you don't like the way they fill out your tax return, get ready for an audit. Get ready to poke up everything that you, a receipt for everything that you purchased over the last 5 years. They're unbelievable with the methods that they use. And the amount of taxes that we're paying out there, well, let's face it, it's too much. I don't care who you are or what you're saying. I'm telling you, you don't mind paying taxes, then you aren't paying any taxes, period. Okay? And either that or you have just hit the lottery and you don't really care either. And a lot of people are sitting out there thinking, well, there's nothing I can do about this. You know, what can we do? Well, folks, you can vote for Duncan Hunter. Duncan Hunter is going to work and stand behind the fair tax. And the fair tax is something that, that just needs to be explained a little bit. Basically, what it is, it's a tax on goods and services on the retail end. And it is something that will be collected by your states and shipped onto the federal government from there. This sort of thing is like, you know, they're calling this tax a revenue-neutral tax because it's basically, it doesn't really require a lot of the money that it takes in order to fund the department that will be taking it in and accounting for it. You know, basically, a lot of it's going to end up going out to your state tax people for them to hire maybe a little bit of extra help that it takes to bring it along. But other than that, you won't have an army of IRS agents. And with this, they actually plan to abolish the 16th Amendment, which brought us the income tax to begin with. Which, let's face it, okay, the income tax was never constitutional. Wasn't ever correctly ratified by Congress. It is a what's the word I'm looking for? It's a regressive tax. Okay, it is a progressive tax. It is not distributed evenly, and there's a word in the Constitution that I'm looking for. I want to say apportioned amongst the states, but it's not a good one. It just doesn't work out the way it is. And I mean, people bear it. Okay, it seems you know a lot of well, everybody basically accepts it as this is it. Now, there are a million ways, of course, that you may go out there and try to get around it. Erwin Schiff has written many books on this. And, you know, and Erwin Schiff, if he had taken some of his own advice earlier in life, he might have gotten away with it. However, he did manage to spend some time in jail because of it and has written exclusively about it for years. But even that, you know what I mean, it's a no-win situation. And in the end, you end up spending so much of your hard-earned money on it that it's nuts. You know, I mean, if you look at the amount of taxes that you pay on your federal income tax, and I'm talking to any average person out there, your average guy out there who's making the average pay right now, you know what they call the median pay of $18.57 an hour, he's paying around 25 to 27% of his income tax. If his income goes directly to the federal government, now you add on top of that all the other taxes that you are already paying along with things. You know, the sales tax in various states, your state income taxes, your Social Security on top of it, Medicare tax, and all the rest of it, you're losing close to 60% of your pay. All right? Now, you know, you will hear people out there tell you, well, you work until May the 25th of each year, just, you know, before you start making any money for yourself. Well, that's fine. You know, you'd like to hear that after May 25th they're going to stop taking taxes out of your pay, but that doesn't happen. It just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And then you turn around and you look at his fair tax. Now, the fair tax, okay, at first seems a little steep. All right, it's 23% that you're going to pay on top of any new goods out in the marketplace and on any services that you buy on a retail fashion. What you don't associate? Whoa, a 23% tax on everything I buy? Well, yeah. But stop and think about this, okay? Something that's worked along with this thing that actually makes this tax a progressive tax is something called a prebate. Now, the prebate was something that took a little bit of understanding. But basically, the prebate is something out there that everybody gets. Okay? Now, the way it works is this. You know, under the fair tax, all Americans consume what they see as their necessities of life free of tax. Now, while it doesn't permit any exemptions, the fair tax, which is H.R. 25, provides a monthly universal prebate to ensure that each family can consume tax-free at or above the poverty level, with the overall effect of making the fair tax progressive in application. Now, if you go to fairtax.org, there's a spot on there where you can look at this and follow along with me, but it comes down to this. What they end up doing for you is sending you money at the beginning of each month. Now, this is everybody. This doesn't matter how your income is computed or anything else. It doesn't matter what your income is or anything along those lines there. This is every single American family, okay? Now, a family, okay, is All qualified families are entitled to receive the monthly prebate. Now, the term qualified family means one or more family members sharing a common residence. A qualified family consists of all family members sharing the common residence. Family members include an individual and his or her spouse, children and grandchildren, parents and your grandparents. Now, children and students living away from home are considered family members if they are registered as a student for at least 5 months out of the year and receive at least 50% of their support from the family unit. Now, children of divorced parents are considered to be family members of the custodial parent. Incarcerated individuals, those of you in jail, are not eligible to be members of any qualified family. Now, in order for a person to be counted as a family member of the family for purposes of determining the size of the qualified family, a person's got to have a valid Social Security number and be a lawful resident of the United States. And this is where it gets good, especially here for the close the borders room. Unlike the earned income tax credit, the application and registration form, the families who choose to receive the prebate must file. It's simple and straightforward. Those choosing not to register will not receive a prebate. The registration form only requires the following information: the name of each family member who shares the residence, the Social Security number of each family member, the family member to whom the monthly prebate check should be paid, a sworn statement that all listed family members are lawful residents, that all family members sharing the common residence are listed, and that no listed family members are incarcerated. It's going to ask the address of the shared residence and the signature of all family members 21 years of age and older. Now, the way this works is this. Just take and say that you are a two-person family, a couple, and you have two children. Well, at the beginning of each month, you are going to receive a check in the mail for $525. And this is basically calculates out to, it will actually bring your rebate to a point. Well, look at it this way. If you're a family making $13,690 a year, okay, you're actually going to come out ahead on this. That $525 a month will be, what does that work out to be times 12? That's another $6,000 that will be added to your income, all right, basically to take care of the necessities of life that are going to be taxed when you go to purchase these things, because nobody gets away from paying the tax, all right? Whenever you go to purchase something in a store, just like they're adding sales tax on now, they're going to tax that on top of it. But that $525 is going to be extra on top of that. So if you were living underneath the poverty level, which they consider to be about $27,000 a year, you're going to make a little money here. You're actually going to have an extra $525 a month to spend. All right. If you got six kids, you're going to get up to $792 a month. Now this is money that it's tax free. It's just money that they ship you each month at the beginning of each month to help you pay the tax on whatever it is that you're going to buy. And that's what they're looking at for the necessities of life, you know, for clothing. Because let's face it, you know, the poorer you are, the more the total of your paycheck goes towards necessities of life. I mean, let's face it, you got to go out there, you got to buy food, you got to buy, you know, whatever. So, you know, you're going to pay the tax on top of it. This way here, you are not in any sort of a regressive situation. Now, the cool part about this is the way it works out for those of us above that, okay? Now, if you are making, say, $54,000, according to this chart here, $54,760 a year, okay, you're still going to get, you know, that prebate, you know, according to the chart here. Let's say, you know, there's still the married couple with two children, $525 a month. They figure that the overall tax rate that you will have paid at that level is going to be 11.5%. Now, don't forget, they're looking at that $54,760 a month, you know, plus the $6,000 a year that they're going to send you. You know, so you're going to be paying 11.5%, and it kind of goes up from there. Okay, if you're starting to get into the upper income brackets, you know, you're $110,000, you're still getting $525 a month, but you know you're going to be spending a little more of that money out in the marketplace. So they figure your tax rate will end up being about 17.3%. All the way up to $876,000 a year, where they figure you will be spending 22.3% of your income. Folks, I don't see it getting any nicer than this. Now, you've all heard my tax schedule. And personally, I think it's all fair. To me, personally, I think if you're going to go out there and trade, you're going to tax the wealth, then every single trade out there should get taxed at the exact same result or at the exact same rate, no matter what it is, no matter when money changes hands. That, to me, is the only way to make it fair. The problem is it's uncollectible. Let's face it. No one in his right mind would subscribe to my tax system because it's unenforceable. There's no way. There would be just too much going on out there. But this way here, it actually works out pretty good. They're already collecting sales tax on everything that you buy everywhere. And everybody that has to register with their state, you know, who's collecting sales tax. And it just works right along the same way. Instead of just collecting the 5 or 6 or whatever your state's percent is, sorry about you people in New York that are paying over 8, I hate to hear that, but, this same sales tax is going to be added onto the top of everything. I think what you'll end up seeing is a lot of prices and things out there kind of moving up a little bit, but not a whole lot. Because don't forget, all the taxes that are built into the prices of the things that you're looking at now. You know, they'll say that, well, look, you know, from the manufacturing to the distributor level and from the distributor out to the wholesaler level, things are never taxed at those rates. Well, this is true, okay? But taxes are still built into that because all these people that are handling this along the line, well, they're paying income tax, you know, just like the rest of you. So that tax is built into the prices that they're charging their customers down the line, okay? You know, in the end, even though, you know, you may say, well, look, yeah, I'm only paying a 6% income tax on that now. Well, that's not really true because you're paying everybody else's income tax along up the line from that. You're paying their federal income tax. You know, it's just like anybody anywhere. I mean, let's face it, people out there complain about, you know, or talk about how much corporations don't pay taxes. Corporations never did pay taxes. Their consumers pay the tax. That's who's always paid the tax on it. But the fair tax, you gotta love it. The more I look at it, the more I got to say that this is the way to go. And hopefully we're going to have some more people on here next week to talk about it. I hope I explained this to you. If anybody out there has got any questions about this, feel free to raise your hand because I think I'm enough of an expert on it right now to really give it a go and talk about it. And if not, I'm going to move right on here. I do want to turn around once, you know, while we are on the Duncan Hunter kick in a big way. I would like to point everyone to Duncan Hunter's record in Congress. And an amazing thing. Just a total amazing thing that this man has looked at. If you go over to a site that is called votesmart.org and head into there and you look down at voting categories, you can type in Duncan Hunter's name there and it'll come up with everything he has ever voted on. And I defy anyone to look at that and say that he voted with the liberals on any one of the issues that man has voted on since 1995. I mean, just forget it. You're just not going to find anything in there. And the records here go all the way back to then, 02-08-1995. You know, anti-crime bills, he voted yes on. You go up and down there, and it's just unbelievable the amount of stuff that this man has and where he's headed. And what he's done for this country so far, I think it's just exemplary. And beyond exemplary. I mean, the man is a shining example. I keep looking for something in here to say, I can disagree with him about that. But I haven't been able to find anything. All right. My friend Charla from Michigan, you've got your hand up. Cool, right ahead.
Well, Mark, my question on a flat tax, and I question this every time, because everybody keeps coming out with these arbitrary figures, 20%, 10%, 17%, but no one, I have never been able to get anyone to tell me what it takes to run this government. I can't get that answer. So until someone can tell me what it takes to run this government, I'm not for a flat tax. Because I don't trust them enough not to give us both. Oh, gee, the flat tax isn't enough. We're going to have to go back to payroll deduction. Because people don't complain at payroll deduction. Only people that complain about taxes are people that have to write that check on April 15th. Most people at $100 a week, $200 a week, they're not upset. So, unless you can tell me what it takes to run this government, I'm leery of it.
Charles, I don't think there is anybody in the whole entire Congress who can tell you what it takes to run the government. I really don't. I can't tell you that they're taking too much in taxes, and I can tell you why this looks a little better. All right? First and foremost, what you're going to see here is when you get your paycheck each week, there will be no federal income taxes taken out of it. There'll be no Social Security taxes taken out of it, and there'll be no Medicare taxes taken out of it. All right? So the first and foremost thing that you're going to look at is a paycheck that just got a whole lot larger without you doing anything more for it. That, I think, is the cool part. Now, as far as how it's going to be advertised in the stores, that's a good question. Okay? You know what I mean? As far as, like, going into the store and saying, geez, I ain't going in there. Now everything's 23%. I'm going to find some other way to get it. Well, yes and no. Because, like I say, I think you're going to see some of the prices. When you look at the stores, I think you're going to see some of the prices actually go up, but I think you're going to find most of them are including that tax in it just to get you in the door. They're going to have to figure out ways around this. But I think overall, you know, in the end, the fact that you were going to see your whole paycheck each week, you know, without, you know, the federal income tax taken out, without Social Security taken out, without Medicare taken out, it's going to be like, yeah, I got all this extra money. Yeah, I'm going to go spend it. And that's exactly what you're going to do. You know, I mean, that's what happens. And putting the money into people's hands to do what they want with and giving them enough money to pay the taxes on necessities, I just don't see it getting any better than that. The research, my friend, you have your hand up. Mike is all yours.
Thank you, thank you. As I was typing, I actually agree with Charlotte. That's one of the, but that, you touched on one of the problems. If you can't tell, imagine doing a home budget. This is kind of like Morgenthau's human nature realism, like an adaptation of it to, you know, national, like economics. You're in the house, right? You have to tally up your bills. And then you have to pay your bills so that you can still have a house and your kids can go to school and you can live at the standard of living that you want to live at. And you guys touched on a very crucial issue. No one can really tell you how much it costs to run this country. You know, when you state and local and federal tax, and there's like about a gajillion other little loopholes and all the data. Right, because it surpasses, as I typed, human-bounded rationality, which means human beings cannot know everything about one subject. But that doesn't mean we just still shouldn't know what it costs to run the country, because we need to know. What do we do? I would contend we should adopt a national expert system to analyze the economic data of the United States. That's what corporations have done. That's what Japanese corporations did. I mean, the United States pioneered artificial intelligence, weak AI, or what's known as expert systems, to perform the very kinds of analysis of monuments of data that is almost impossible for a human being to analyze, or even a group of human beings to analyze, in a time-critical manner for you to sit there and actually make, to use the analysis in any kind, in any way that's going to be helpful. Because the data changes. It's constantly fluid. And once we do that, there should be like a flat rate. This is what I would support, a flat rate, a federal flat rate. This is the bills of the United States. This is the money we need to run our country and live at the standard of living that we care to. This is, and then you tally up what everybody makes, and you give a flat rate, period. That's it. So, you know, like what corporation makes, if it's 20%, they pay 20%. And on the other level, if you're homeless and have a nickel, you give a penny. Flat rate. It's fair, but first need to do the analysis and see how much it costs to run the country. And I would contend the utilization of expert systems the way, say, Japanese corporations have done would be go a far way to doing that, instead of having congressmen beholden to special interest groups. Thank you.
Yeah, I still think it would end up being hard. And the thing about it is those guys end up putting it in such... You ask people like that to do things, and they put it in such terms that, like, yeah, they did their job. But it's like, you know, look at this. What am I looking at? You know, how do I decipher what the hell is really going on when I look at their reports, which will be millions of pages long? You know how these guys work. I understand what's happening here. And then on top of that, though, I mean, you're basically asking another outfit, aside from the guys that you elected to office, to do the job of the guys that you elected to office. You know, and to me, that's just pushing it a little bit. You know, now I think another one of the big benefits of this is the fact that there's going to be a whole lot more money swimming through the society or through the economy all at once. I really do. I mean, as soon as this gets enacted, everybody's going to go nuts, and I think you're going to see the economy grow really quick and then just level off. I mean, not a level off to a steady rate of growth, you know, because, you know, what is it that actually makes things grow? You know, new products, new inventions, new ideas, things of this nature, new goods, new services that enter into the economy and generate more wealth. But, you know, putting all this money out into people's hands, especially the extra money that they're going to get each month, and I think that's the kicker here, is going to be such a spur to the economy that people aren't even going to look at that 23%. I mean, in the end, yeah, they're going to gripe about it. But I, you know, or at least in the beginning, I think they will. But I think after, in the end, after, you know, you see that your paycheck is like a whole paycheck at the end of each week, yeah, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. All right, my buddy Pox, you've got your hand up. The mic is all yours.
One of the problems with this is what you're doing there is you're greatly increasing transactions costs to people. Gains in retail sales. I would argue you're going to have a lot of leakage from people resorting to barter, people resorting from going to other countries to consume simply to avoid what's going to be a 30% transaction tax. If you don't think 30% transaction tax is an incentive to engage in a lot more barter activity, it's just going to happen. So people will find ways to avoid paying the tax. And on the other, then you're going to have to worry. You're going to have a bureaucracy to run them down. You're going to have a bureaucracy to mail out checks. I mean, in other words, everybody's going to get a government check now. You know, I don't think this is a panacea. I think, you know, it's a 30% transaction tax when you count what the states are going to be charging and everything. You're going to give people an incentive to avoid retail sales.
That was my complaint up front. I thought about the same thing. But the fact of the matter is it really won't if you look at it. And here's why, all right? A, there's as much barter that's going on out there now, probably going to continue, okay? Now look at this also, okay? Used equipment, used stuff, and whatnot does not get taxed, all right? So it's like, you know, I mean, under the law, you know, if you were like, say you're a guy like me, okay, who would buy a used car, maybe make $500 or $600 on a used car, you know, fix it up a little bit, jack it up $500 or $600, flip it to a neighbor or a friend or somebody else, pocket the cash. You know, by rights, I should have been reporting that as income, okay, and paying the tax on it, all right? And, you know, you always ran the risk of getting caught with it, especially if you PO'd somebody that you sold a bad car to, all right? Think about it. A lot of things are like that now. None of these things, all of this that was illegal before, will now become legal. And they don't have to worry about the IRS coming after it. So, yeah, I mean, I imagine a lot of things you're going to see. Oh, I mean, used cars that are sold off of a car lot, you're not going to see any tax on that. Okay? Just new cars, new equipment, new houses. You know, now I would imagine reading through this, it's also going to go along with food, clothing, and everything else that wasn't taxed before. I mean, like, you know, according to this thing here, any new goods or products in the marketplace are going to be taxed. Yeah, you might see people going here and there to get stuff, okay? People are already doing that now. But, I mean, that's a geographical kind of thing, all right? I mean, you see people that live along the border with Canada head over to Canada to buy cheaper liquor, cheaper beer, cheaper cigarettes, what have you. I mean, I know people here in Massachusetts that drive to Vermont on a weekly basis with a cigarette order in their hands. And they're going up to Vermont and they're buying carton and carton and carton of cigarettes for all their buddies. And they come back down here and they might mark that carton up $5. They get a $5 a shot on the carton. Guy make $100 in a day for taking a, you know, a 2-hour trip up north. You know, it's okay. But I don't think that will change. I really don't. You know, the only thing that's going to happen is that 9/10 of it that was illegal will now be legal. All right, my buddy, do research. You got your hand up again. Go right ahead.
Well, I want to actually expand upon this issue that I kind of previously pitched in on. You know, it's not only just the fact that you have monuments of data. First, no one's done the real analysis of the overall cost that is required to run our country, to include federal, state, local expenditures, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one of the issues or one of the hurdles is because the amount of data you're dealing with is just absolutely amazing, far beyond any one individual, even group of individuals, even if it's Greenspan, to really deal with. Secondly, you have congressmen that are beholden to special interest groups. And third, the other issue is that you have people that don't even understand economics in office. I'll give you an example. Bebe, do you remember that the most recent report, War at Any Price, it was put out by predominantly by Democrats, right? They sit there and try to perform an economic, and I use analysis loosely, an economic analysis, I put the link in the room, of the of our interventionist foreign policy in Iraq as it pertains to the U.S. economy. And you go to page 4, and here's what it says. Borrowed money to finance the Iraq war has displaced productive investment. Hold on. Now let me finish. Since taxes have been cut and other spending has increased since the beginning of the Iraq war, it seems clear the war has been and continues to be funded using borrowed money. And here's the crucial part they make, which in fact I called Schumer's economic advisor, and he didn't have an answer for me because I crushed him. The interest in the government borrowing displaces substantial amounts of productive investment by the U.S. businesses. Okay, so you're telling me that government expenditure or deficit-funded public sector expenditure somehow undermines private sector investments and productivity. Well, the only argument that they could say that they're making is what's known as capital shortage profit squeeze. And if they're making that argument, how come they don't levy that to, say, non-military public expenditure consumption, which comprises the lion's share of federal deficit expenditure, to include from the OMB $700 billion for health care or $656.92 billion for Social Security this year. Amazing. They show no indexes and to qualify their amounts. This is ridiculous. If you did this in an economic, if you did this in an undergrad macroeconomic course, you'd get an F. You'd get an F. They'd fail you. And that's another problem. You have people who are making policy that have no clue about economics. Either that or they do, and they're so beholden to special interest groups, whether it be right or left special interest groups, both sides have them, that they don't perform an accurate their economic analysis doesn't represent, is not accurate. It's advocacy, science, or research. Yield the mic.
Politics has never had anything to do with cost-benefit analysis. It's got to do with an individual politician's cost-benefit analysis. You know, you're living in a dream world. You know, you think that the politics can be run by technocrats. Not in a representative democracy. Phoebe, I just don't think it would work because, you know, when you're talking about a 30% transactions tax, and you're talking about, you know, used, okay, you know, I can take a used car and I guess put $30,000 into it, make it look new, but I guess it's still a used car. I just fixed it up a little. You're going to tax the value added as being new stuff? No, it seems on the surface to be easy and straightforward. Well, then you're going to get an incentive for, you know, vote. I won't build a new house. I'll just take an old shack there and add on to it, you know, and say, well, that's, you know, have some little shack, add on to it, and spend $1 million and say, well, it's a used house, so I don't have to pay anything. I just improved it a little. You know, that's what you get into, what's used and what's just for the processing of material. You know, I suppose you could say steel is known, but the iron ore that's had some processing done to it. I just don't think it'll work. And, you know, 30% is such a huge incentive to avoid paying it. There's lots of ways. People will resort to barter, a lot more barter. Now, you know, one of the advocates that the fair tax people make is that because of all the embedded taxes, prices will drop. So even if we accept them at their word, the prices will drop, let's say, the 23% the taxes go up. you still have an incentive to be even 20% lower by barter, by getting around it. So people do it all the time with sales taxes at 5% and 6%. You know, and you're going to suddenly make it 30%. You're going to have a lot of leakage from this thing. And plus, the idea that you're going to get away from it. You're going to have rules and regulation on what's considered news, what's considered new. You're going to have all these rules and regulations on how to define the family, how to distribute the prebates and everything. You're just replacing one massive bureaucracy with another massive bureaucracy. I kind of like the idea of a consumption tax, but that's simply because I think we have to start taxing consumption when we consume too much of the tax. But, no, Charlotte hit on the point I'm making. You know, the problems we're having have nothing to do with the tax system. I don't believe it. It's got to do with spending. The government needs so much money that we have to have high taxes. You know, no tax system is going to solve your problems if you got a government that continues to spend. So my answer is true tax reform is spending reform. That you know Duncan Hunter, God love him. I don't think this system would be necessarily completely bad, but I don't think it's a panacea that Bortz. I listened to Bortz for years talk about this. I'm not buying his argument. I've heard people call him and point out things that he dismisses. I just don't believe it. I don't believe you can have that high of a consumption tax and you're not going to have lots of problems with enforcement, with administration, and with the bureaucracy that goes along. So you're going to replace one IRS with another.
All right, let me see if I can't answer a little bit of that for you. All right, okay. So you go out and buy the used house that you want to avoid the tax on. Fine. You say you're going to go and fix that house up. All right, well, you're going to go out and buy lumber. Well, you're going to pay tax on the lumber. Okay, you're going to go out and buy plumbing supplies. You're going to pay tax on the plumbing supplies. Okay, you're going to go out and buy, whatever. I mean, let's face it. You go into Home Depot to get all this stuff that you're going to buy to fix that house up, you're going to pay taxes on all of it. Now, according to this thing here, you know, from what I can see, and it's only mentioned a couple of times, but the services. Now, should you go out there and buy, hire a carpenter or hire somebody else? On a retail sale of his services there, you're going to pay a tax on that too. Which, by the way, isn't 30%, it's 23%. It may not sound like a lot of difference, but 8% is quite a bit of difference at this point. But I still think that the surge that it's going to give to the economy by putting that much money in everyone's hands, okay, is going to make a huge difference in how much goes on here. Now, I'm not going to disagree with you about the spending, okay? We're all on board with you with that. I think even Duncan Hunter's on with that. You know, as I mentioned here last week, you know, the National Endowment for the Arts, right out the window. And I'm sure he's got a whole lot of other things in his list there, too, that he's just not going to mention on here now, but that he will definitely be pushing hard for once he becomes a president. You know, they have to go. You know, it's like I said, you know, look at all the things that we spend out there. Look at all the money you can spend out there just on consultants to study things. You know, all the grants to go out there to try this and that. You know, you turn around, you take all that money and you sink it back into your education, allow the people to get an education in such a subject, and then hit the free market with it. You're going to make a whole lot of change. You're going to definitely change your spending habits quite a bit. Yeah, no doubt about that. But still, you know, it's like I say, I still think it's going to end up working out. I really do, in the end, you know, because we're still going to need new products to do any of these things you're talking about. You go buy the used car. Well, I'm going to, you know, if I stick $1,000 worth of parts into it, that's $230 tax that I'm going to end up paying to the parts store that the government will end up getting. Okay, so in the end, they're not going to lose. You know, there's no way about it. But, of course, I'm going to agree with you with the spending. All right, Charlie, you have your hand up there. Go right ahead.
Well, my question on it, Mark, is I remember here in Michigan, and this is where I don't trust the politicians and the pigs with their hands on money, too many lobbyists. You're talking 23% sales tax. It just blows me away. But payroll deduction is very easy for the government. They already have employers collecting the taxes for them. employees are, they're taking rent out of their checks, set to the government. There's, it's just a simple system. But here in Michigan, in the early 80s, they were going to change our tax structure from paying the difference on a car, on a new car. So if you bought a new car and it cost $20,000 and you traded in a used car on that car and the difference was $10,000, you paid taxes on $10,000. So everybody thought, well, that's a great idea. That's absolutely a great idea. But in order to make up for the loss in revenue, they increased the cost of the title, and the cost of your license plates went from like $8 to anywhere from $150 to $200 for a set of license plates. That lasted 90 days, Mark, 90 days. And they took the tax off on the difference, went back to the $20,000, full tax on the $20,000, and plus the high license plate fees. So I can see a case where politicians are so hooked on money and buying votes and buying off lobbyists and groups that they will give us a 23% sales tax and then in the end say, oops, guess what? Just not enough money. Back to payroll taxes, and now you have both. That's the problem I have with it. I don't trust politicians. And it's not that I don't trust Duncan Hunter. I plan on voting for the man. But he's not always going to be president. And besides that, it's Congress that handles the taxation. It's the House, and I don't trust those people in the House. You're Mike Fox.
Yeah, go right ahead there, Fox.
BB, I'm not against the sales, consumption tax. There are a variety of reasons it's good, you know. Duncan Hunter points this out, and I think it's sort of lost on people exactly what's been going on under the WTO and the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. Now, we can't tax foreign goods, yet through a consumption tax, European countries, the Chinese and everybody are actually doing that. American goods come in there, they slap the value-added tax on American goods. The exporter, they rebate all the consumption taxes, value-added taxes back. So there's a big tax advantage that many countries are using, most of our major trading partners are using to disadvantage us when it comes to trade, because we support government with income taxes. We don't support them like these countries do with value-added taxes, which makes it possible for these countries to jack up the price of imports, rebate all the taxes that run the government to the exporters, while Americans don't have that because of the way our taxes are collected. We cannot rebate the income taxes and the Social Security taxes and everything that go into making our products back to the exporter. But they do it with their exports in these countries that have value-added taxes and consumption taxes. And it's really, it puts American goods at it just off the top of the 15 to 20% disadvantage, simply because of this loophole. Now, Duncan Hunter wants to correct it. I think it has to be corrected because we're getting screwed on this deal. Now, American exporters are paying the price. Government in these countries because they tax our goods. So, from that. standpoint, I think a consumption tax would probably be a good idea. And, people who don't understand, they just go to Duncan Hunter's website and click on the one about the chair. That's been going on. It's legal under GATT. It's blatantly unfair. It's using governmental tax policies as a protectionist weapon, and we haven't done anything about it.
Yeah, you're right. I hear what you're saying here, but, you know, as far as a consumption tax goes, you know, but how are you going to work a consumption tax in this country? Now, to me, that's what I was saying before. Like, my tax plan, it would be just unenforceable. You know, just to put it as briefly as I can, the way I would like to see taxes work is this. All right? I believe that we should only tax the wealth. And I believe that wealth, okay, is really only what you volunteer for trade in the market, period. Your possessions, no matter whether you're holding a little or a lot, do not count as wealth. The only person that can determine what wealth is for anyone is for himself. You are the only person in the world that can determine what you have that you would consider to be wealth. The only way you're going to volunteer that as wealth is if you take it into a market to trade it. Now, I don't care if it's a good, or it's a service, or it's your time, or what have you. But if you're going to make it fair, okay, and I mean fair, if you're going to go back to the Declaration of Independence and say that all men are created equal, then you're going to have to turn around and say, well, look, the only way you're going to do this is to make it an equal tax every time money changes hands. I look at it this way. Okay, suppose you have nothing, all right, but you have walked into the marketplace seeking a job. Well, you are wealthy in time, and you have just volunteered your time. So at that point, your time needs to be taxed, okay, when you're trading. All right, and if you're bringing a good into the marketplace, well, then you tax the sale of that good. You know, if you're selling your labor, or you're selling a good, or a product, or a service, or what have you, and it should all be taxed at exactly the same rate. I think if everybody was honest about it, you could do it for like 3 or 4% and probably solve all the country's problems in no time whatsoever. I really think you could. I think you'd see an honest GDP. Right? I mean, you look at right now the gross domestic product that they calculate every year, and I'll bet that it comes up anywhere between 30% and 40% short of what actually goes on out there. Due to under the table, due to bartering, due to what have you. You know what I mean? Anything that the government just doesn't see. All right? So, your GDP would be way higher than that. But if everybody was honest about it, and they just paid 3 or 4% on that, I think 3 or 4% you could solve all our problems and make this country cash rich in 2 years. I really do. The thing about it is nobody would be honest about that. Nobody at all. If you could avoid it, you would avoid it. And trying to enforce it would mean creating, another army of people to try to enforce it. So it won't work. You know, that's why I look at this fair tax system, which is already using existing tax structures, which is, those that are run by your state government. Your state government's going to have to hire a couple more people here and there in order to take, whatever they took in. Look, they're already taking in state taxes on stuff. All right? On top of that's going to come in this 23% tax. So you get somebody else there to handle that and say, okay, yeah, here's the 23%. I'll hit the keys on my keyboard and that'll go to the federal government. Period. It'll work out really good. And I think that's, that is the way to go. It's revenue neutral, as they say. Plus, on top of this, it abolishes the 16th Amendment and it abolishes the IRS. most people you talk to out there have really never been in problems with the IRS. But try it sometime. See what happens when you get in touch with the IRS and what they will do to you. I'll tell you what, anybody that lives on a state line and works out of state, okay, they know what they're going for. They know the kind of problems they've had on the state level. All right? Moving back and forth, things of this nature. The IRS, man, they've nailed me, many times. And I've never worked for anybody that didn't take taxes out of my paycheck. Never. But still, somehow or another, every 10 years or so, find myself in tax hell. And it was rough. I mean, I remember when I was in the service, they took all of my pay for like 3 months. Wasn't a whole lot of money, but it was like, what do I do? How do you stop them? You can't do a damn thing to stop them. I remember one point back in the middle of the 90s there, we got a letter from the IRS stating that the IRS has recalculated our taxes and you owe this much more for each of the following years. I think it was 89, 90, 91, and 92. It totaled up to about $12,000. And then when we didn't cough it up right away, they just stepped right into our bank account and cleaned it out. Just cleaned it right out. And I'm sorry, but an outfit that can do this to you, I don't want them in my country.
And to think that I would be putting them out of business, out on the street, making them go get a job like the rest of us? Yeah, baby, I'll tell you what. I paid a 23% just to see that happen. All right, my friend, the research. Your hand is up. Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you can... I mean, I think that's a little odd that they recalculate taxes. Well, recalculate taxes, stuff you've already paid on. Yeah, that seems a little odd. You know, it's kind of like we're kind of arguing the same sides of a coin. Like, both parties tax and spend. The difference is what they tax and where they spend it. For example, the left will tax productivity or investments in productivity and then expend that on social entitlement programs that pander to the very demographics of our population that comprise their voter base to ensure electability. That's exactly what they do. You know, the right does it like a little bit in the reverse. They tax maybe the middle class, and they leave out investments in productivity. You know, the point is, what is the bill that needs to be paid, and where do you get the money to pay it? We need to know what's the bill to be paid for us to sit there and maintain the standard of living that we are accustomed to or that everybody agrees that we should live at. And where do you get the money to pay it? How we contend, taxing productivity is not the way to do that. You know, you talked about, or what you, this kind of touches a little bit on what Unit was talking about regarding, I guess, trade wars. Actually, maybe you reminded me, Unit, when you were talking about, the tariffs or added taxes that are put on, value tax that are put on in other countries of U.S. goods, and they're engaging in protectionism. Reminded me a lot of what Toyota did. Is the kind of economic warfare that reminds me of what Toyota did in the 80s when they dumped cheap Toyota cars in the United States with the active goal of killing the U.S. automotive industry. They were waging economic warfare. My only question, I'm not saying we shouldn't wage the same kind of warfare. My question is, how do you do so in such a manner that you don't concede comparative advantage? As far as investments in productivity or expenditure overall, I definitely don't like to see overconsumption decline or overexpenditure decline. That being stated, that does not preclude that in sometimes in times of economic crisis that deficit expenditure defined as investments in productivity is not desirable. I would contend that they are. Something that Baby is talking about. You know, we need to invest in R&D and S&T to maintain predominance in leading sectors. So that the United States is the command economy in the world system. Because if you don't have, and there are some leading sectors where the first mover advantage is so great that maybe you need to do deficit expenditure in R&D and S&T so that you can maintain your predominance in that sector. You incur the first mover advantage. Anyway, here you go.
Go ahead, Fox.
The problem is the government expenditures. Most of the rise have been in things that are basically consumption. It's not an investment. And some of the investment that is done is rather poorly done. Certainly we invest a lot of money in infrastructure with the government, but it's not the best infrastructure. It's whatever congressman has the pull and can get the particular money for some program for his district. So, we can have any kind of tax system we want, and it's not going to do any good unless we control the spending. Because they're going to have to fund the government somewhere, and the bigger it gets, the more money they're going to have to collect. Your 23% may be good for a while, but if they keep on the spending habits, they're going to need more and more and more. Conservatives don't like that, but, you know, there aren't many conservatives around. George Bush certainly wasn't a conservative by that standard. You know, with the Republican Party, the problem is the American people are getting what they ask for. The reason why we have a pill bill is because the overwhelming majority of people wanted the damn pill bill. That's why we have and you know, whether you fund it through an income tax or a consumption tax, you're still going to have to fund it.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And you're right about a lot of them bringing it back. You know what I mean? Our congressman here, John Oliver, wouldn't have got elected if he wasn't promising pork to various groups out there. You know, of course, this is basically a Democratic state. This is Massachusetts, and they look for that. You know, you get together with any informal meeting with these folks for anything that's community or what have you related, and we're all around to that. How do we get the money out of the government to do this? How do we get the money to do that? You know, it was amazing. I mean, we just right in my neighborhood here, they all got together one day and started talking about improving a local park. And instead of getting together and saying, look, why don't you come over and cut the grass, and why don't you come over and do this, and hey, I'll come over and paint the fence, and blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, how can we get the money out of the government for this? How can we get a grant to do this? You know, what would it take to get a professional grant writer? Somebody to just come in here, and we pay him a portion of the grants, just come in here and apply for all the grants that are necessary. I mean, and then this is exactly what it came down to. You're right. There's no doubt about it. Now, personally, I hear all of them out there saying the same thing. We got to cut spending. We got to cut spending. But where and how? You know, other than the one mentioned by Duncan Hunter there, I haven't heard anything from Giuliani. I haven't heard anything from Huckabee. Haven't heard anything from Mitt Romney on exactly what he's going to do. Now, I know what Mitt will do. Okay, Mitt won't raise taxes, but he will show you how to raise fees on every little damn thing out there. You know, like Charlo was saying there before, you know. Now, Charlo, here in Massachusetts, they were talking, you know, you were talking about the paying the difference on the cars. That's exactly what we do here. You know, but we protested highly when they tried to make up a lot of that money in registration fees. And what they ended up doing was raising the commercial fees and taking the passenger cars back down to $30. You know, which even meant a light truck, if you weren't registering the light truck commercially. You know, it's $30, that's it. Or I think it might be up a little more than that now. It might be 37 or 40. But, you know, now commercial registration is another deal. Commercial registration starts at $110, and for every 1,000 pounds of GVW over 8,500, it goes up $10. You know, so you get a 20,000-pound truck out there, you're paying some dough on it. But, I mean, you know, this is what they're going to do. And Pox, you're right, as far as getting the spending under control. But, you know, I want to hear more of them, get more specific on it. Well, when we get Duncan Hunter on here in a few weeks, we're definitely going to hit him with it. No doubt. Don't forget that, folks. We will have Duncan Hunter on the show here at December the 10th at 8 p.m. He's coming in, and we'll be available for questions for people in the room. It's going to be a hell of a night. Get to actually talk to one of them right here in your own private little chat room. Okay. My friend, do research. Got your hand back up. Go right ahead. We've got 2 minutes before we get to the break here.
Thank you. Again, I mean, where do you get the money? I would tell you what we need to do. I would reallocate. I would kill Social Security dead and reallocate the FICO taxes towards investments in productivity, specifically R&D and S&T in leading sectors, as well as building human capital in those sectors, as well as investments in our infrastructure. Those things need to be done. You know, you have to sit there and invest in productivity, but where does the money come from? And actually, Unit actually mentioned a very good point. You know, why do we have the pill bill? Because the majority of people said that they wanted it, and hence they voted for it, hence we got it. And that's absolutely true. It brought up a discussion I had with a researcher from MIT. This was back in the later part of 2005. We were discussing, you know, when he had wrote a article in MIT's research journal regarding how applied science is undermining our long-term sustainability because it crowds out investments in, say, basic and pre-competitive research. Well, my point to him was we need to do all three. And he's like, you're right. But the reason why we don't have the money to do all three is because you have a lot of that money already allocated towards non-military public consumption. And that is due to a sense of entitlement effect, or what Ciapola called the thinner generation effect, or what Gilpin calls a corrupting influence of influence. People want something for nothing. So what do we do? What should we do? We need to reallocate our society's efforts from social entitlement programs to investment in productivity. That's what we should do. But that's going to be hard to do because you're fighting two very social, you know, very dysgenic social Darwinist kind of trends, right? You know, which is people, the more generations go between the people who produce wealth, my grandfather's generation, the current generation, the more sense of entitlement grows.
interesting. Quite true, though. You know, they are like that nowadays. You know, it's the days of John Kennedy. Ask not what you could do for your country, or ask not what your country could do for you, but what you could do for your country. They're gone. They are gone, you know. You talked about justifying it before, and you're absolutely right, you know. The way they justify the stuff, you know, if they had to do it on a cost-effect basis, well, yeah, they do it that way. But let's face it, their effects are ethereal. The costs are quite real, but the effects are ethereal. I mean, look at welfare when it first started up. Those people don't even remember what the whole reason welfare was started. Believe it or not, it was to reduce crime. They figured that most of the crime that was being committed in this country was being done by poor people. And that if we gave poor people enough money to get by, the crime would go down. Well, did it work? Not really. Not quite the way it was. All right. Mr. Peek, you have your hand up there. We got 1 minute. We're heading to the break. The mic is yours till then.
Oh, I just wanted to check in. My new favorite chat room. A lot of really highly intelligent people in here. And I'm not a graduate, but I live in the state of Missouri, so I'd be remiss if I didn't say... We're number one. We control our own destiny towards the national championship. So that's the last sports comment I'll make tonight. But Trent Lott, good man as far as I'm concerned. Good steward of conservatism, steps down. Hope we can hold that seat in Mississippi. It'll be leaning Republican, hopefully. But does anybody have any thoughts about that seat and any other open? Well, the self-elections in general, though, I'm not really concerned about the president right now, but the Senate is also on my mind.
All right, thanks. When we come back from the break, I'm actually going to get into that. No doubt, yeah, we're going to miss Trent. But at any rate, folks, we're at the top of the hour here. It's time for our producers to make a little bit of money. Time for you guys to hear some ads, and we'll be right back. You are listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com, and the ASI Radio Network, brought to you from Politics Lobby 4, Secure Our Borders Voice Room. We'll be right back, folks.
PalTalk isn't just the latest, greatest messenger, or the most diverse and vibrant chatroom community. It's the ultimate online communications tool, period. PalTalk enhances the traditional instant messaging and chatroom functionality you know and love, with state-of-the-art voice and video that you'll enjoy with all your senses. That's why PalTalk is the world's most popular free voice and video chat instant messenger service. PalTalk. Communication beyond words.
Hey, this is Phil from America Today Live, brought to you by Politics Lobby 4. Join us every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time for America Today Live. We'll discuss issues, political issues, social issues, my issues, your issues. My wife says I have more issues than TV Guide. I haven't figured that one out yet. But join me every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time for America Today Live.
In a time where good and evil have become completely distorted, one bright ray of light shines through. Politics Lobby 4. A modern-day battle of epic proportions. One light, many voices. Frontline with Kit Burke. The Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. And the Extreme Court with Randy Wright. Good versus evil, light against dark, and fact versus fiction. Stay informed, arm yourself, and prepare for the battle. www.politicslobby4.com. Now is the time.
Politics Cafe and Politics Lobby 4 are proud to host an evening with GOP presidential hopeful Duncan Hunter. on Monday, December 10th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join your host, Mark Belcher, for what is sure to be an exciting and informative interview. That's Duncan Hunter, Tuesday, December 10th, right here in Politics Lobby 4.
ASR. Audio. Are you ready? Video. Interactive. And you can catch it all. That's right. At ASI. You're listening to the Politics Cafe with Mark Belcher. Coming to you from Politics Lobby 4. Join us at www.politicslobby4.com. That's www.politicslobby4.com. Or join us live in the Social Issues and Politics section at TalkTalk.com. We'd love to see you there.
Sense of anxiety, this unshakable sense of doom, but that was before I tried forgetting.
If you're a supporter of Hillary Clinton and you have a nagging fear that her shameful past will come back to ruin her election chances, this message of hope is for you. DNC Pharmaceuticals presents Try Forgetting, more than just a drug, a way of coping.
Hillary was in charge of destroying the reputations of the women Bill sexually harassed. That used to bother me. Then I tried Try Forgetting. Now I don't even remember what a bimbo eruption is.
When I tried Try Forgetting, I completely forgot about the missing files from Vince Foster's office, Chinagate, the Madison Guarantee swindle, money for pardons. It's all just gone. Thanks to Try Forgetting, I believe there really is a vast right-wing conspiracy that makes Bill jump into the sack with all those girls.
Here's the best part. I even forgot that Hillary stood by her husband even when she learned that he'd raped Juanita Broderick. Thank you, Try Forgetting. Thank you, DNC Pharmaceuticals. I definitely recommend Try Forgetting to all my fellow Democrats. It made the difference between... What was I saying?
Side effects are generally mild and include nausea, dizziness, and loss of self-esteem. In more severe cases, side effects include delusions of victory, irrational exuberance, and the complete suspension of rational judgment.
Try Forgetting, whatever it takes to win.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com and the ASI Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Belcher. I'll be with you for the rest of the hour. Kind of had a little toss-up here, but we'll go back to the taxing here in a minute. Fred Thompson's got a tax proposal here, too. And in all fairness, we're going to get to that. But Trent Lott announces his retirement. This down off of the Reuters News Network about an hour before the show came up. By Richard Cowan. Trent Lott, the second-ranking Republican in the U.S. Senate, today announced he will retire this year, 5 years before his term expires and ending the conservative's 34-year career in Congress. I'm announcing today that I will be retiring from the Senate by the end of the year, Lott said in his hometown of Pascagoula, Mississippi. Let me make it clear, there are no health problems. I feel fine. I may look my 66 years, but I honestly feel good, said the former college cheerleader. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour is expected to pick a fellow Republican to take the seat until the next congressional and presidential election in November 2008. When Barbour said he would call a special election, the conservative state's other senator, Tad Cochran, is also a Republican and is running for re-election next year. Speculation that Lott was considering retiring so he could make more money in the private sector began about 2 years ago after his Mississippi home was heavily damaged by Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Lott is ending his Senate career after making a remarkable political recovery from a gaffe in 2002 that cost him his position as Senate Majority Leader. at a 100th birthday celebration for then-Senator Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, who ran unsuccessfully for president as a segregationist in 1948. Lott was quoted saying that Mississippians were proud to have voted for Thurmond for president, and that if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over the years. Now, President George W. Bush and then-Senator Bill Frist, a Tennessee Republican, were said to have helped nudge Lott out of his leadership job. But on Monday, Bush had only kind words for Lott, saying his immense talent will be missed in our nation's capital. Lott made a series of apologies to black organizations and others for the remark that he said had been misinterpreted, and gradually worked his way back into Republican leadership. John Bruce, an associate professor of political science at the University of Mississippi, said Charles Pickering, a Republican congressman from Mississippi, was the most likely candidate to replace Lott. Now, Democrats currently hold a narrow 51-vote margin in the 100-member Senate. Lott is the sixth Republican to announce his retirement, putting those seats in more competitive play in 2008. No Senate Democrats have yet announced they would not run for re-election. Lott was first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1972 before entering the Senate in 1989. As his party's whip in the Senate since January, he has been responsible for legislative strategy and ensuring that minority Republicans mostly stick together on key votes. Lott was a member of the House Judiciary Committee in 1974, loyally defending then-President Richard Nixon when the panel passed articles of impeachment on Watergate. Excuse me. His retirement announcement kicked off a scramble among Senate Republicans for his leadership post, with Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, John Kyle of Arizona, possibly seeking the job, according to aides. So, Trent Lott, yeah, we're going to miss you. It's, you know, after everything that's gone down there, I guess I kind of can't blame you for wanting to move on at this point in time. And considering a man's qualifications, you know, it's maybe he's due for a raise. So I wouldn't blame him at all. You know, go for it. And it's good to hear that Haley Barbour is looking at another Republican to bring him in there. That's a good thing. So we will see. We will see. I don't know. I think personally that the race for the Senate is still wide open in 2008. And, you know, we haven't heard too much about it yet. Here in Massachusetts, I don't know if any of our boys are up yet. Kennedy's term might be up, but I'm not really sure. And they just elected John Kerry back in there, so we're going to be stuck with him for a while. All right, now, this one down off of the AP. And this is about Fred Thompson and his tax choices. Maybe we can talk about this a little bit. I don't know, maybe it'll sound a little simpler to you, but we'll wait and see. Now, Republican presidential hopeful Fred Thompson proposed an income tax today that would allow Americans to choose a simplified system with only two rates, 10% and 25%. Thompson's proposal, announced on Fox News Sunday, would allow filers to remain under the current complex tax code or use the flat tax rates. Asked whether the plan would cut too deeply into federal revenues, the former Tennessee senator and actor said experts always overestimate the losses to the government when taxes are cut. We've known for years, anytime we lower taxes and anytime we've lowered taxes, we've seen growth in the economy, Thompson said. Thompson added that money would be saved by his Social Security reform plan. He proposed that workers younger than 58 receive smaller monthly Social Security checks than they are now promised. Individuals could contribute 2% of their paycheck to a personal retirement account, an amount that would be matched by the Social Security Trust Fund. The retirement plan faces up to the fact that Social Security is going bankrupt and we're going to have to do something about it, he said. Excuse me. Thompson proposed permanently extended tax cuts enacted in 2001 and 2003, reductions that would end after December 31, 2010, unless Congress acts. Republicans Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and John McCain said they would also extend President Bush's tax cuts. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated it would cost the government $2.3 trillion from 2008 through 2017 if the expiring cuts were extended. Romney said he would eliminate taxes on interest and dividends for families earning less than $200,000 annually. Now, key aspects of Thompson's tax proposal. The choice of filing under the current system or a flat tax rate of 10% for joint filers with an income up to $100,000. $50,000 for single taxpayers, and 25% on income above these amounts. The standard deduction would be more than doubled to $25,000 for joint filers and $12,500 for singles. The personal exemption would be increased to $3,500. A family of four would be exempt from income tax on the first $39,000. The simplified code would contain no other tax credits or deductions and retain the 15% tax rate on capital gains and dividends. Now, it also would preserve the $1,000 child tax credit, which was doubled from $500 per child. It would be protecting marriage penalty relief, would be retaining education tax incentives, including the Coverdell Education Savings Accounts, 529 college savings plans, and deductions for higher education expenses. It would permanently repeal the estate tax, eventually repealing the alternative minimum tax, a separate system created 30 years ago to ensure that a few high-income Americans could not use deductions and credits to eliminate their tax liability. Thompson also would index the exemptions annually so that millions of middle-class families would not be subject to the tax. Now, House Democrats earlier this month pushed through an $800 billion bill to block the spread of the tax. The White House and Republicans protesting tax increases in the bill, affecting mainly investment fund managers, maintained that it would never become law. Bush supports relief from the tax, but promised to veto any bill that raises taxes as a condition of fixing the WMT. That's a pretty good move there. Also, what did he have on top of this here? Reducing the top corporate tax rate from 35% to no more than 27%. Permanently extend small business expensing of equipment and other small business items. And update and simplify depreciation schedules. Now, most of us out here, from the small business guy, you know, I really like that. Extending small business expensing. You know, that's something that was part of the tax cut package that Mr. Bush introduced in 2003 that I really think helped spurn a lot of this economy. You know, a lot of our heavy equipment manufacturers and whatnot really got a big boost from that. And, you know, that was worthwhile, you know, to just allow those guys to take a depreciation on things over a few years. Really wasn't much. I mean, a lot of times the depreciation didn't amount to anywhere near the payments that they were making on it. It was just, it was insane. But allowing someone to just cut the whole thing right off of whatever they spent on it, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, I mean, I think you should be looking at running them right off as a cost of doing business. Yeah, of course, Democrats, they got other ideas, but, you know, that's the Democrats for you. Who's interested in them, you know? It's funny, at least you hear all of this coming from these guys, and what are we hearing from the left? Nothing. Nothing but we're going to have to increase taxes somewhere. Obviously, all of these entitlement programs that have to be having out there are, you know, got to happen. I mean, look at the health care boondoggle that's going on out there. You know, it's funny, we're talking about that here in Massachusetts, you know, which is supposed to have had this universal health care plan here. And it's basically what Hillary is talking about out there now is really starting to run into some flack here. An article in a paper here the other day that was talking about, you know, basically what it is. It's the government mandating individuals to do something. You know, this is where the government is actually telling you that you must go out and do business with insurance companies. And, of course, they're running into problems with it. They got themselves at a point now where they've had, they've had 600,000 people sign up, at least get in on this. But they have no idea how many people have not gotten into it. But already they are looking at being like $15.9 million further over the budget than what they thought it would be. Now, of course, they say, well, what do you mean with a budget? People got to go buy their own insurance. Well, guess what? Yes and no. Okay, you only have to buy, you have to have health insurance. But if you're not making that much money, well, you don't have to go buy it, not here in Massachusetts. What you have to do here is you hook up with what's called the Insurance Connector Board. And the Insurance Connector Board will take a look at your income, take a look at your expenses, and find out what your net worth is, your net pay. And if it's low enough, you don't have to pay anything, or you may have to pay just a portion of it. Now, of course, someone else has to pay that portion. And what they're doing there is they're coming down with... you know, part of the people who are paying insurance are putting into what they call the uninsured pool, which means everyone's rate is basically going up. Now, they're looking at insurance increases next year, insurance premium increases that are already trying to run through the House and through the Senate here, of anywhere from 11 to 17%. And they're fighting, trying to get it down under 10%, but so far they just can't find any way to do it. It's not going to happen. Now, this is just going up under the current system here. Now, on top of this, what you're looking at are the penalties for failing to get insurance or failing to hook up with the Insurance Connect report. Now, right now, it's not going to be too much. All it really means is you're going to lose your $219 personal exemption from your income tax. But starting in July, it's going to mean a fine, and it could mean a monthly fine. Now, how does the state work with things like that? Well, now I'll stop and think about it. They're going to go right back over to the DOR, Department of Revenue. We all know, well, everybody in the state of Massachusetts knows how they work. They'll just quietly send you a bill every month. And after 3 or 4 months, when nothing happens but that bill, you'll just take the bill and chuck it in the trash. You know, thinking, hey, they can't force me to buy health insurance. Until it reaches such a high enough thing where you couldn't possibly pay it. And then, bang, here they come. First thing they'll do, I guarantee you, is just go right in and clean out your bank account. Second thing they're going to do is lay a lien on your house. And they don't have to go to court to do this either. It's not like they're going to go in and ask a judge and say, hey, this guy hasn't paid us this money that he owes us, so we need to get a lien against him. They'll just slap a lien on you. They do not care. Now, of course, if you still have a mortgage on your house, the mortgage company's going to have, you're paying your mortgage, well, they can't take your house. You know, if you were smart enough to at least file the Homestead Act, they probably won't be able to take your house for it. But fact of the matter is, they're still going to come after you and get it any way you can. And this state will do whatever they can. They will come after your cars. They'll come after anything that you leave laying around. They will come out for anything that you have in a bank. You know, if you have an investment fund with some investment manager somewhere, they may decide to go in and clean him out. You know, if they can go into a bank, don't think they can't get into your Schwab account. Or don't think they can't get into your TD Waterhouse account or any other account that you may have out there. Sell off whatever stock you have in there and just take the money. Hopefully it'll be enough. And of course if they take everything and it's more than what you owed, well, go fight them and try to get it back. You know, good luck. But it's already being mounted here. There are people who are already talking about taking it to court on this. And it's basically because, you know, the government trying to compel private citizens to go out there and enter into contracts with people that they have no desire to do. All in the name of supplying health care to everyone. Isn't that a tough call out there? Now this, of course, is on top of the fact that they have already regulated the way health care will be performed, how HMOs will function, how the hospitals who service all these HMOs function. And we all know, my one friend isn't here tonight, I wish he was, Mr. MD guy. Unless you're in the room here, I'd love to hear a little bit talk about how we do in your state. But, this is where you're coming from. We're talking about an oppressive government taking a tyrannical control over you. Now, it's only a small part, you know. But if we let them get away with this, what will be next? That's the thing that I'm asking. All right, I'm going to relinquish the mic here a little bit. Someone named C.T. Gent has got his hand up there. My friend, the microphone is all yours.
A tyrannical government? I think you might have forgotten this little thing we call the Constitution. And it says in the Constitution that if we have such a thing as a tyrannical government, the people are allowed to dismember it and create a new one. So if you don't like it, if you think it's tyrannical, if you're against health care and people living longer and things like that, well then, what can I say for you? I mean, you know, I don't even know what to say to a stupid thing like that. I think you're probably a conspiracy theorist as well.
Well, you can go right ahead and call me a conspiracy theorist, my friend. This is exactly what is happening in the state of Massachusetts. And it's also exactly what's going to happen if you get Hillary in there. You think you're going to get something for free? Now, nothing, my friend, is free. Someone has to pay for it somewhere. Okay? And for you to be compelled into purchasing something from some company that you don't want to do business with, something that you may feel you have no need for, and especially something that is going to be benefiting someone else or a portion of it, who is not contributing to the system. Well, and stop and think about this for a second. Is this what you really want? No, nobody in here and nobody in this room is suggesting in any way whatsoever okay, that we don't want to help other people. All right, but the medical system in this country worked quite fine before the government got its sticky little fingers into it and decided to start regulating everything. So long ago that you probably don't even remember when it happened to begin with. Something tells me he's already been bounced out of the room. But, yeah, what are you going to do, you know? You're always going to run into people like this, you know? They don't care. And you know why they don't care? Because they're not going to pay for any of this. You know, this is the entitlement mentality that we were talking about in the last hour. You know, the people who feel that they deserve health care, that they have a right to health care. Do you realize that if you're going to sit there and say you have a right to health care, which means you have a right to have health care professionals work for you, come in, perform services for you on your terms without them having any say in a situation? It's me. That's slavery, my friend. There's a 13th Amendment about that. Didn't you just mention the Constitution? Unbelievable, some of these people. All right, my friend, my buddy Dave, you're up.
Mark, I also come from the same state as MD guy, so maybe I can shed some light on this great socialist state called Maryland. Socialism is here. It's thriving. Everybody is under the mind's eye of contributing to others makes the state better. We have every year a new saying by every new mayor. Last year's mayor was Believe. The one part of that was Maryland is the reading capital of the world. It's just strange that when you look around, everybody gripes about sharing. But when it comes to it, we do it. It's a really weird system here, bro. Really weird. But it works for Maryland, and Maryland's not looking to change it anytime soon. That's why we vote Democrat every year. I am part of the 33,000 registered Republicans, so 33,000 against 6 million is a hard fight. But we do, and we get things achieved, like no college tuition for illegals. They want it to stand. We'd have to pay it. 500 or something like that, illegals to college. 4 years they'd get paid. Would come out to something like $55 million of state money per year for this. Way to go, Mayor Martin. Governor Martin O'Malley. Thank you. Don't ever vote for Martin O'Malley. Ever. Ever.
There we are. Doesn't like having a disruptor enter the room once in a while. Somebody bounce that boy for me here, would you? Mr. Nutritious. Very good. Yep. All right. You got to love it. Every now and then you're going to have a disruptor come in here. Did it scare you there, Rose? Yeah, not to worry about it. We'd bounce them right out of here really quick. I got a hand on a button for anybody new that steps up to the mic. They're not getting away with anything for very long. You got to love the way these people are looking at all this, you know. And, the worst part about it is, find, you know, you really come down, you hit the main key word here. And that word is, you got to believe. You know, now I look at this in the big picture, and I look at society, I look at mankind, civilization, right over the whole thing, and how things have worked throughout the ages, you know, and history, and how things have worked before, why they didn't work before, and whatnot. And I have always looked at the medical community as only being one step removed from the cave. Now, despite all the technological advances out there, despite all the technology, despite everything else, they are still basically the tribal medicine men. That's all there is to it. Now, the tribal medicine men held sway over everything, okay? And they did it because of one thing, belief, you know? No doubt about it. In the end, stop and think about it, you know? The fact that they're going to be able to take care of everyone's problems, and everybody is going to be healthy. Well, that resides in a belief, you know? And it's just a belief, because they can't do it. Everyone here has access to medical care, okay? But people are still dying, you know? How many people out there get cancer? Now, let's face it, a lot more people are being cured from cancer nowadays than there were before. People in this room, you know, we had a guy who was in here this morning, one of our good friends, Johnny, you know, talking about how he went down today, had a test, and he's still in remission with his skin cancer, and he's happy as a clam. And you can't blame him. But still, you know, a certain matter of faith for him to get down there and believe that this was going to happen, because most people who get cancer are going to die. So you're working on a belief system here, okay? And these beliefs all take one thing or another, and that's a certain amount of faith in order to work. You know, which brings me back to who it is that should be performing these services, or those that have the faith in it. You know, where have all these services come from throughout history? Well, from faith-based institutions, you know, i.e. the church. You know, hospitals are a product of the Catholic Church from way back when. You know, Hebrews got into the act not too long after that. You know, let's face it, they're smart, they're very industrious, hardworking people, disciplined people, who understood the same need, who were guided by the same principles. You know, even the Bible told them way back when, you know, do not forget the widow and the orphan among you. You know, do not forget the sick, help the poor, blah, blah, blah. No doubt about it. But this is still a faith-based principle. And that's where all these things came from in the past. You know, now personally, the way I see it, I personally think that you should be able to take whatever money that you have extra, and, you know, and I would like to see your Social Security money right now. I mean, you know, the total 12% that they're taking from Social Security, or 13%, whatever it is, and let you turn around and sink that right into the church. Church of your choice. And I don't care if it's a Catholic church or a Hebrew synagogue, you know, congregation of synagogues, whatever their overall thing is called. You know, whether it's a Protestant denomination, whether you belong to the Church of Agnostics, whether you get together and call yourselves the Atheist Socialist Group. You know, doesn't matter. Sink your money into them, and then you and them can have any arguments that you might have about your health care, or your old age, or your retirement, or any other social service that you deem necessary with them. Basically, let the people handle it. Because these things are all faith-based, I look at them as being part of the First Amendment, establishment of religion, okay? If you are establishing a health care system in this country, you are basically establishing a religion. If you stop and think about it, if you take it down to its base ideological, philosophical levels, you are establishing a religion. Doesn't the First Amendment, like, prohibit the government from doing that? And I think that the rest of us out here who all have some basis in faith, I'm a Catholic, you know, I'll agree that people should be helped, that we should be able to do the best we can. But me, I would far rather see that money going to the church, you know, because I know that the people who are working in there really have got, you know, the motivation that they're really out to help. Now, I'll face it, you know, I'm going to sit here and tell you right from the get-go that these people are still trading. They're not really necessarily trading with other people. They're trading with God. They're looking for some other higher spot in heaven, somewhere closer to the throne, or whatever, any way you want to conceive it. And that's completely up to you. But that is where it all came from. You know, back when I was a kid, the local hospital that I was born in, you know, that I was taken to for any little things that I had, was mostly staffed by nuns. You know, women who were in there who had taken a vow of charity. You know, had a lot of priests working in there, too. A lot of doctors were working in there who knew damn well that every one of these patients isn't going to be able to pay. But you know what? They were making enough money they could afford to go and do it anyway, and they didn't have to worry about getting sued for whatever they did. Now, that, to me, I think is a system that could work, especially nowadays with all the technology and stuff. And having it administered by, you know, people who have taken a vow of charity, you know, taken a vow of poverty, you know, who have dedicated their lives to helping other people, you know, in their praise of God. Now, to me, that's the people that I want to see handling social services. You know, any premise that you look at that says that one man is responsible for another, or that as a group we need to get together and do things in such and such a fashion, or that we're going to do something for the greater good, or the common welfare, or anything else, has at its base a faith. Okay? And I equate faith with religion, and I look at the First Amendment, go right back and say, yeah. Because it's not the purpose of government to administer any religion. It's not the purpose of government to put you in the hands of any faith-based institution, which I still look at any of the medical society as being a faith-based kind of thing. I mean, you got to believe they're going to help you before you go in there.
Now, they may have given you pretty good reasons to believe it, and a lot of times you know that they will. You know what I mean? Your faith may have gone beyond faith into being convinced about it, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm convinced there's a God. It's gone beyond faith with me. But I still got to place that away from the government, you know? Because what is the government? You know, stop and think about it. A government is nothing more than an institution that has an overpowering force. Period. It has the force to compel people. Should be wielded very, very carefully. We set up this government for one reason and one reason only, and that was to keep the peace. Period. You know, defend your borders, defend your people, and keep the peace. To settle disputes, which is why we have a court system. But to settle the disputes in a nonviolent and peaceful manner. That's all it was ever for. To protect people's rights. To protect you from violence. And the only reason it was going to protect you from violence is because it had such violence at its command that it could out-violence anybody that was going to, come and present violence to you. That's the only reason it was ever there. That's the only thing in real power it ever has. That's the only place that government can work in an efficient manner. You know, it's through the means of violence. But when you turn around and you say that, you know, you hold that threat of violence over people's heads to go and perform certain acts for people, especially under the guise of health care, you know, come on. I'm sorry, they can't take it away from you without them getting violent. They cannot come and take your money out of the bank without, you know, well, they couldn't come and take it out of your hands without you getting violent. Of course, you know, it used to be you could put your money in the bank and it was safe from everybody, but it sure as hell ain't safe from the government anymore. You know, we know that, you know. Why do you think people stuff all their money into their mattresses and other things, you know? I mean, I'm guaranteeing there's a lot of people in this room right here that are very, very honest people. But, you know, a lot of their investments, guarantee it's in hard goods, gold, silver, cash tucked away somewhere just in case. Come on, you all know who you are. I'm one of them. I understand that. You know, just in case something happens. I mean, it looks like a power outage. What are you going to do if you can't get your hands on some cash? Your credit cards ain't no good. You know, your ATM card won't be worth anything. You don't have a little bit of cash sitting around here. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Flyover's got the nail right on the head. Gold, 10,000 rounds of ammo. Hey, it's right, baby. Keep your powder dry. You know, but that's really what it's all about. You've got to be able to take care of yourself. And if you believe in something that, you know, that people should be getting together and helping other people, well, by all means, do so. You know, get together with your fellow man. Go down to your pastor, your rector, your rabbi, your imam, your mullah, your head agnostic, you know, the chief atheist or whoever it is that you believe would be best to administer this. Give him your money and let him do it. If he doesn't do it right, then you can gripe to him. But not the government. That's not what government's purpose is. It's not what the government's here for. It's not why we formed this government. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, you look at years and years ago. I mean, it's look at the family doctor in your neighborhood. As educated and as talented as the man was, he knew when he was going into somebody's house how much they could afford to pay, and he would charge him accordingly. You know? I mean, look at this, too. Think of all the doctors that you know out there and how many of them are not religious. You know? How many of them don't put at least some of their faith in God? How many of them don't use the word God at least once in any conversation that they talk and use with people? You know, most of the doctors and nurses that I've met out there are very, very religious people. Because they understand that in the end, my friend, that's who you're going to answer to, is going to be God. You know, and if you're going to do these things in the name of God, well, then by all means, go right ahead. You know, we've always had the rule or the right of voluntary association with people. We've always had the right of assembly. You can assemble with your friends and get together and do the best you can in health care. I don't see why not. Personally, I think that if we took it out of the hands of the government, out of the hands of bureaucrats that have no idea what health care is, and put it back into the hands of the religious who started it, who brought it into this world, you know, who modified it, who codified it, who put it into a system where it worked, you know, however inefficient it was, you know, they could still solve it and make it better today. I mean, look at the administrative costs that would be cut out of this. Look at the hassles with insurance companies that could be cut out of this. You know, let's face it, it's a workable situation here, folks. But it's something that we got to be able to get together and do on our own. I mean, just stop and think about this. Think about this for just 1 minute. Just suppose you were to take an amount that was equal to your Social Security each week and give it to your church. And just suppose that everybody in your neighborhood did the exact same thing, or everybody everywhere did it.
You know, I bet that by the time Social Security actually ran out of money, declared itself insolvent, said it wasn't going to pay anybody, I'll bet at that point in time nobody would even notice because your Social Security would be there, okay? The housing that you would need, the medical care that you would need, the nursing home situations that you would need, you know, would all be provided for you by whatever institution you had been paying into and doing working for years. You know, look at all the volunteer help that goes on with these kind of places. You know, when I was a kid, you know, there was at least six or seven girls in every one of our classes that would come to class 2-3 days a week wearing a different uniform. You guys all remember Catholic schools. You know, all the girls had to wear the same thing. You know, our school, they had a blue jumper with a Peter Pan collar. Period. That was it. But the ones that were dressed a little different, they had a candy stripers uniform on. They got to leave school at noon. They climbed on a bus and they were taken over to the hospital. And they went in through the hospital and emptied all the trash cans and made all the beds. You know, they weren't paying anybody for housekeeping to do that when they could get volunteers to do it. Now, of course, the Democrats are going to scream, geez, you want child labor. You know, I don't see anything wrong with making kids perform a little bit of labor, especially the easy stuff that could be done on a volunteer basis in the name of some religion. I don't have a problem with that at all. Matter of fact, I think more of it ought to happen. You know, all the hospitals out there now still rely on some volunteers to do some kind of help out there. You know, even our local hospital here, which is not, you know, not religious-oriented, even though it does have a cross sitting over the top of it, you know, still relies on volunteers for so much, you know, every year. Hell, I performed in plays for them every year for 4 or 5 years, you know, so that they could raise money, you know, for the church's ladies' auxiliary. We'd put together a show once a year. It was 4 days long. They would charge people $25 or $30 a head to get in. And they'd raise themselves, you know, $200,000 to $300,000, you know, whatever, any of this. You know, I've done AIDS benefits as an actor. You know, I've done concerts as, you know, for different charities out there. Never minded a bit doing any of that kind of work. It was for a good cause. So what, you got to take a couple hours out. Everybody's going to have some fun. And in the end, somebody's going to benefit from it. That's the way I think things should be happened out there. The problem is that we as a people have allowed this to slip out of our hands and to slip into the hands of the socialists who demand it, who have taken our religious tenets and put them into some sort of humanism, the secular humanism that they use for religion, just taking it away from the people entirely and put it into the hands of the government. Into the hands of an institution that is nothing more than a vehicle for violence or a tool of violence. That's all it is. That's all it ever was. That's all it ever will be. And yet here we have it. So now we are going to let those whose only real expertise is violence to come in and give you health care. Now, does anybody see the oxymoron going on here? Anybody see the glaring contradiction in all of this? I do. But we were allowing it to happen. You know, so this is what's got to change. You know, this is, it's actually something that I'm working on out there, believe it or not. And I'm working on it in a hard way. And I really believe that this is the way we have to go. All right. Moving right along here. Now that you've all let me get that off my chest, thank you very, very much. A couple other things going on out there. Here's one that I wanted to bring up. For a little bit of discussion here for the last half hour tonight, or the last 20 minutes that we got here. And this is this is something that's actually been on my head here for a little while. We had a case here over the weekend up in the Pittsfield, Massachusetts. They have a housing project up there called the Wilson Project. And last weekend, the cops decided to all get together and just take a walk through the place, knocking on doors and seeing if they could help people there. Managed to make 3 or 4 drug arrests, found a couple of people who were fugitives from the law, backed them all up, and basically went in there and did all of this without ever securing a warrant or any other thing whatsoever to go into this housing project. And then on top of all this, I got one here today off the AP that says the court won't review San Diego home hunts. And this is going, of course, it's unauthored here, so I can't tell you any more than it came from the AP, but the Supreme Court rejected a challenge Monday to a county's practice of routinely searching welfare applicants' homes without warrants and ruling out assistance for those who refused to let them in. The justices refused, without comment, to intervene in the case from San Diego County,
where investigators from the local district attorney's office show up unannounced at applicants' homes and conduct searches that include peeking into closets and cabinets. The visits do not require any suspicion of fraud and are intended to confirm that people are eligible for government aid. Failure to submit to the searches, which can last an hour, disqualifies applicants from assistance. The 10-year-old program was challenged by the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of six single parents who were seeking assistance. The welfare applicants argued that the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits unreasonable searches, protects them from home visits. When the investigator conducts the home inspection, no part of the home is off limits, they said. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, upholding the program, said the Supreme Court in 1971 allowed social workers to visit homes in New York to determine eligibility. The appeals court, in a 2-1 decision, said the visits do not even constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment, in part because people are free to turn away the investigators. In dissent, however, Judge Raymond Fisher said it was unlawful for an investigator from the district attorney's office to go walking through the applicant's home in search of physical evidence of ineligibility that could lead to criminal prosecution either for welfare fraud or other crimes unrelated to the welfare application. The local government said the high court should not step in. No applicant has been prosecuted for welfare fraud based upon anything observed or discovered during a home visit that contradicted information provided by the applicant, the county said in its brief to the Supreme Court. 8 appeals court judges voted to have the full San Francisco-based court hear the case. 7 of those judges called the program an attack on the poor. The case is Sanchez versus San Diego, 07-211. Now, on the surface of it, you know, most people are going to look at this and say, yeah, well, you know, the government's giving them money, so they should be able to make sure they deserve the money. Well, stop and think about this here, folks. This is an entitlement program. These are people under an entitlement program. What's going to happen if the entitlement program called National Health Care comes down the road? Now, does that bear a little bit of thought to you? Now, I've said before that one of the first things you're going to go after with this is tobacco or alcohol. Okay, find out. You know, I've said before that what's going to happen with health care is going to be a triage. All right, those who need it the most are going to get it the first. Okay, and those who need it most will also be determined by, you know, who became afflicted through no fault of their own, and those who have self-afflicted diseases. Now, obviously, those who became afflicted with something through no fault of their own are going to go to the head of the line, while those who have self-inflicted diseases are going to go to the end of the line. Think down to the future here. Once you have signed into this health care program, let's stop from coming in to see if you're a smoker. Let's just stop coming in to see if you've got any alcohol in your closet. You know? What's to stop coming in and finding out that you're doing anything in an unhealthy manner? What's to stop coming in, taking a peek in your refrigerator, and seeing if you have too many trans fatty oils in there? Seeing if you get too much hamburger in there? Seeing if your ration of butter for the amount of people that you have there goes beyond government limits? Stop and think about this. You know? Now, I'm going to tell you something. These people here that are looking at this are saying that their constitutional rights are going to be trampled on. I'm going to tell you no. Okay, actually they're not. They are receiving government aid, but evidently the aid that the government is getting them is under some sort of a contract. I guarantee you that their signature is on some form somewhere that they have not read all the fine print on. And somewhere in that fine print probably allows the government to go right in there and do whatever it is they want. But folks, if we accept national health care, we will be accepting the same kind of intrusion into your lives, you know, like it or not. To me, that's what I see. All right, now getting ready to open this up here to discussion. Does anybody want to raise his hand, talk along with this here? Yes, no? Because I can babble on here for a few more minutes at the top of the show. We don't have too much. But, you know, just wanted to put something out there for you all to think about. You know, because it is, it's not a fun situation if you look at it in the future. I mean, right now on the surface of it, yeah, a few welfare families in San Diego having their home searched. Yeah, it may not be too big a problem. You might not have a problem with that. But if we don't speak up about these people doing this now, you know, who's going to speak up for you when they're doing it to you in the future? All right, on top of that, since nobody's hands up, nobody wants to have it get into the situation, got the last thing on the agenda here tonight. And this one here would have all you liberals out there just shaking in your boots. This is by Ben Feller, Associated Press Wire, press writer. Down off the AP, came out about 23 minutes before the show started. President Bush today signed a deal setting the foundation for a potential long-term U.S. troop presence in Iraq, with details to be negotiated over matters that have defined the war debate at home. How many U.S. forces will stay in the country and for how long? The agreement between Bush and Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki confirms that the United States and Iraq will hash out an enduring relationship in military, economic, and political terms. Details of that relationship will be negotiated in 2008, with a completion goal of July, when the U.S. intends to finish withdrawing the five combat brigades it sent in 2007 as part of the troop buildup that has helped to curb sectarian violence. What U.S. troops are doing, how many troops are required to do that, are bases required, which partners will join them, all these things are on the negotiating table, said Lieutenant General Douglas Luke, President Bush's advisor on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The proposal underlines how the United States and Iraq are exploring what their relationship might look like once the U.S. significantly draws down its troop presence. It comes as a Democratic Congress, unsuccessfully so far, prods Bush to withdraw troops faster than he wants. Bush and al-Maliki signed the new U.S.-Iraq Declaration of Principles during a secure video conference Monday morning. Al-Maliki, in a televised address, said his government would ask the United Nations to renew the mandate for the multinational force for one final time, with its authorization to end in 2008. The U.S.-Iraq agreement will replace the present U.N. mandate regulating the presence of U.S.-led forces in Iraq. Al-Maliki said the agreement provides for U.S. support for the democratic regime in Iraq against domestic and external dangers. It also would help the Iraqi government thwart any attempt to suspend or repeal a constitution drafted with U.S. help and adopted in a nationwide vote in 2005. As a side to that, I'm surprised you liberals out there haven't been jumping up and down for joy by reading that Constitution. You know, I certainly thought it was nothing more than a socialist document, but take it for what it is. At any rate, that appeared to be a reference to any attempt to remove the government by violence or in a coup. Al-Maliki said the renewal of the multinational forces mandate was conditional on the repeal of what he called restrictions on Iraqi sovereignty introduced in 1990. By the UN Security Council to punish Iraq for invading neighboring Kuwait. The new agreement would not signal an end to the U.S. mission here, but it could change the rules under which U.S. soldiers operate and give the Iraqis a greater role in determining their mission. Two senior Iraqi officials familiar with the issue say Iraq's government will embrace long-term U.S. troops presence in return for U.S. security guarantees and as part of a strategic partnership. The two officials who spoke on condition of anonymity, my favorite term, because the subject is sensitive, said U.S. military and diplomatic representatives appear generally favorable, subject to negotiations on the details, which include preferential treatment for American investments. Preferential treatment for U.S. investors could provide a huge windfall if Iraq can achieve enough stability to exploit its vast oil resources. Such a deal would enable the United States to maintain leverage against Iranian expansion at a time of growing fears about Tehran's nuclear aspirations. The framework Bush approved outlines broad principles, such as that both countries will support Iraq's economic institutions and help its government train Iraqi security forces to provide stability for all Iraqis. Lute said all major national leaders of the existing Iraqi government have committed to it. The basic message here should be clear. Iraq is increasingly able to stand on its own. That's very good news. But it won't have to stand alone, said Luke, who rarely holds televised appearances. And that, my friends, is the news for tonight. And, yes, Libs, you can all go cry in your beer now. That's fine. I'll even buy you a free beer. Step up to the bar, have one, and he's got to promise to cry in it for me. That's all I'm asking. All right, folks, that's about it. Ah, my friend Fly, you've got your hand up over there. Well, let's finish up with you.
Well, thank you, BB. As far as your last comments go about a long-term military presence in Iraq, I am just one meaningless taxpayer out here who supports that 100%, because to me it follows the example that succeeded in Europe. I'll say this before and I'll say it again. We had troops in Europe for over 60 years, not to protect the Europeans, but to keep the European human and industrial resources from falling into the hands of the Soviet Union, most likely. So, what are we supposed to do? Let over $10 trillion worth of oil wealth fall into the hands of any dictator who can mount a coup over in Iraq and have to deal with another Saddam? It would be absolutely crazy to not have a military presence in the Middle East. It's about time. To quote Dr. Condoleezza Rice, she said something: for 60 years we pursued stability in the Middle East, and at the expense of democracy, and end up getting neither. Those weren't her exact words, but if you look up Dr. Condoleezza Rice, stability and neither, you'll see the quote. But basically, we chased stability to maintain peace and got nothing in return. So having a government of self-determination in Iraq is fine with me. Having 50 years of troops in there is fine with me. And I think it's exactly what the world needs. The one thing that torques me about this whole thing is, why are the American people the only ones paying for this? You know, Mr. Unit brought up how the value-add tax system with its rebate to exporters is essentially a backdoor tariff system, but yet we don't have tariffs in this country. So I think the idea of America paying for world stability while everybody enriches themselves and then plays games with our currencies and threatens us and all that kind of stuff, that has got to end. So I applaud a long-term military presence in there. It'll maintain U.S. leadership around the world, and it's a long time coming, and there's a line behind me, and I'm getting off the mic.
No, you're a good man. No, I agree. We do need to be there for quite a while. You know, I just for the heck of it, I'd love to know a count on how many soldiers we still have in places like Japan and Okinawa and Germany and stuff. All right, Mr. Moose and Squirrel, the microphone is yours.
Thank you, sir. I came in when you were talking about a moral president, a spiritual president. I assume you're speaking about a Christian president, which is fall in line with our nation's many of the greatest presidents we've ever had. I think that we have to be careful. The Christian voters, Christian right in America, are right now polarizing, and they ought not to do that. What we had when we got Clinton last time was a division of Perot and the other candidate. This is something that we have to be greatly against. The Christians don't want someone who's been married several times, who's at least at one point in their career believed in abortion, whether they do or not today. All these sort of criteria are really not for Americans, but America's best interest, because the alternative, just taking a quick glance at the Democrat platform, and we see that we have someone who may not be perfect, or someone who's just heinous to be our president, and the future of our security, our national interests, being in complete jeopardy. I would suggest to any Christians listening, or maybe any Christians here can tell their Christian friends, to look in the Bible where God, when he chose men and raised men up, the only people he had at his service were sinners. Next on the mic.
All right, thanks. Jay True, I will turn it over to you. We've only got a minute left. Actually, I didn't really use the word president. I was using the word premise and precedent. But one of the things that I can envision here, and I understand where you're coming from, because this is the way religions have been. You know, they will disfellowship, you know, as the Jehovah's Witnesses will do, or they can get excommunicated. But if you have all these various religions out there setting up social systems, social care systems, I'd like to call them, okay, they will also be operating as a market, okay? And, you know, I'm saying to take it out of the hands of the government and put it into them, because then market forces are going to come into play, okay? If you can get a better deal with the Catholics, okay, and the Catholics won't be turning anybody away, Well, okay. Well, then they're going to have to compete with, say, the Hebrews, you know. And the Hebrews are going to say, well, hey, if you come and pray with us, we won't turn you away no matter what happens. You know, the Catholics are going to come back and say, well, hey, you know, we have the sacrament of confession. You can be forgiven for anything, you know. And they will have to compete with each other to keep people. You know, because there will be one religion that will come along and just say, we're going to take anybody. I mean, look at the Universal Life Church out there right now, who takes anybody just for tax purposes. They'll make a minister out of you. You know, and that's one of those ones that I've seen hold up out there in court, believe it or not. You know, when you're trying to beat your taxes, it'll work. Okay, Mr. J. True, I've got 1 minute for you. The mic is all yours.
Hello, my name is J. True. I am a Christian. I just heard you guys speaking. I just want to take 2 minutes here to explain about Christians. I know Pastor Bush is not, he's not doing good by people in Iraq or stuff, and he's not controlling, he's letting the other people beat Americans. We know our country wants to.
Sorry there, Mr. J. True, but you have to come back here next week. Folks, once again, tables are piled high with the chairs. Mater D has already beat feet, taking his keys with him. I got to go find mine to let everybody out. But folks, you have listened to the Politics Cafe, www.herncode.com and the ASI Radio Networks. We'll see you all next week, folks. Thanks for listening in.
Tell me all about it. Take what I do. Go to